Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Life Shifting with Dr. J. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Hull, and I am excited to be back here again with you this week to help you let go of fear and get your life in gear. We are kicking off this week with a two-part show that I'm very excited about. I'm calling it, it's called God and Money, my two favorite subjects. Exciting topics to kick off the year with, I think. And I had the opportunity over the holidays to read a wonderful new book by a colleague and friend of mine who is a very well-known author in the spiritual area. And he has written a book that is hitting the waves in the past few months. And he has decided to join us today, so I'm very excited to have him here. The book is called American Vida, How Indian Spirituality Changed the West. And the author of this wonderful new book is called Phil Goldberg. And Phil is not only a good friend of mine, but he is a spiritual counselor, a meditation teacher, an ordained interfaith minister, and the author, I should say, of many, many books, something like 19 different books on spirituality and wellness. And he's also a screenwriter who lives in Los Angeles and the founder of a center called the Spiritual Wellness and Healing Associates Center. So I want to welcome Phil to the show. Today we're going to talk about God, and next week we're going to talk about money. So gear up, settle in. And let's welcome Phil Goldberg to the show. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Jeff. Good to be with you.
Welcome. Can you hear me okay?
I can, yes.
Great, great. I had a little bit of static there in the background. So I am so excited to have you on the show because I had an opportunity to read this book of yours over the holidays, and I have to say I was very, very excited. I had never read anything quite like it. And as a big fan of yours from the past, I read your wonderful book, Road Signs, and I think it was safe to say it was one of those books that influenced me in putting together my my book on life shifting and dealing with fear from a spiritual perspective. And this was really a different kind of approach to thinking about Western spirituality, because it really kind of, you delved both into the current situation in Western spiritual evolution, but also looked at kind of the history and the strands of the past and how we've kind of come to where we are today. And it was the first time that I'd really seen anyone dig into the influence that not just the East, what we think of as, you know, the Buddhist background, but also in particular the influence of the Hindu religion and the spirituality foundations from India. And so it's just really a wonderful topic and something different. And I have to start off by asking you, what inspired you to set forth on this path and write about this?
Well, in a sense, you could say I've been working on this for 42 years, because back in the 60s, my life was transformed by my discovery of India's great spiritual teachings, and I then changed the direction of my life and became, a spiritual seeker. And the rest of my life has been shaped in large part by the teachings that some people would associate with Hinduism, or more specifically the yogic teachings that came from that tradition, and the philosophical tradition of Vedanta. And so I'd been observing the phenomenon of how India's legacy has found its way into American culture through a variety of streams and tributaries, and watched that phenomenon grow over the years. And I actually proposed a book on it in the 80s and couldn't find a publisher then, about 5 years ago. The religion editor at Doubleday Books had the same idea, and we were connected. And the result is American Veda. And so it was years of thinking and kind of informal research, followed by two or three intense years of work on the book until, and now, you know, here it is.
Well, I have to say, I think it's really interesting timing, and that they were not interested in doing it in the 80s, but now I think, as you talk about in the latter part of your book, it's become sort of ubiquitous for us to think about themes and talk about practices and spiritual issues through the Vedic or through the Hindu or Indian lens. You know, we use the terms, the guru and the yoga and the different practices. And I was talking to different colleagues of mine who I do consider to be spiritual in their grounding. I mean, not religious, but, you know, I guess what you'd call, as you talk about in the book, new thought spiritual. And I mentioned to them that I was reading this book about how this thread from India has been pervading our culture for 200 or 300 years. And how you traced it all the way back to Emerson and Whitman and 19th century influences. And everybody kind of looked at me like, no, really? Is that, does the influence of Hinduism and yoga go all the way back to that? I'm wondering if have you found people that are surprised to hear that people like Ralph Waldo Emerson were influenced by their readings of the Bhagavad Gita and others?
Yeah, there are people who are surprised, and there are also many people who say, oh, thank you for putting all this stuff that I knew into context and in language that the average person can read, because, of course, many scholars knew about these kind of connections, and I drew from their work, but I didn't write an academic book, and I just tried to put all the threads together, not only about people like Emerson and Thoreau, who were directly influenced by the early translations of these texts that came from Europe via India, from India via Europe, but also to trace the many threads by which one person influences another, who influences another, and the way that these teachings filtered into the heart of the culture, like you mentioned, New Thought. The Unity Churches and the Churches of Religious Science that are so popular now, the founders of those things were deeply influenced by Emerson and from direct contact with the teachings of Hinduism and Buddhism.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because so often I think we lose those. We have such a short memory in this country.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I often think that people still think of India as kind of a far removed, a culture that's fundamentally very, very different from ours, and one that, you know, only now is circling back around from a economic standpoint and from a democratic, maybe political standpoint, becoming influential, and it's kind of on people's radar screens. But the way you articulate this evolution is so beautifully done, because it really shows that the influence of those spiritual practices and themes has been around for hundreds of years.
Yeah, and you're right that, you know, India is very different from America, and especially 100, 200 years ago it was even more different. But it, to the credit of these deep teachings, they are so universal, and the practice is so applicable to any way of life that the cultural elements sort of are irrelevant. And the great Indian teachers who came here and made an impact, because it obviously wasn't just books, there's been a parade of highly influential gurus and yoga masters who came
right
here. And they were very wise in adapting these teachings in ways that could be understood not necessarily as religion or religious practices, but as kind of universal spiritual principles, or even a science of consciousness, so to speak. And that's one of the reasons they were so widely adapted and accepted by American culture. So now you have 15, 16 million people practicing yoga and thousands of research studies on the benefits of meditation. All this in a scientific context and a health context as opposed to a religious one.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the things that I loved about this book is that we take some of these practices for granted now in our culture. And what you did in your book is you traced it in terms of the evolution of culture and the confluence of this part of the world. And what I also love is how you circle back around to how we're influencing them currently. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to dig into a little bit more of the history, because I think it's really fascinating to talk about the evolution of the gurus that came here and their impact on us, but also talk about when you talk about science and the confluence of spirituality and consciousness, the impact of the Indian and the Hindu theories is really right there up front. So I think it's amazing how it's like the threads all pull together. So we will be right back. You're listening to Life Shifting with Dr. J. My guest today, Phil Goldberg, has a fabulous new book out, and I will be right back.
Life Shifting with Dr. J is a show about living full out and helping listeners to banish their fears, embrace their dreams, and move with greater ease through the ups and downs of our crazy world. Dr. J's Life Shifting method is all about reinventing and renewing ourselves throughout our lives. Dr. J will have a wide array of entertaining, insightful, and highly credentialed guests who will inspire us with stories of their own life shifts. Listeners will wake up, listen deeply, and reflect about their own lives, and are encouraged to call in and get live coaching from Dr. J and his expert guests who are passionate about helping people reclaim lost vitality. Life Shifting with Dr. J is about heartfelt dialogue, amazing life stories, personal struggles of highly successful people, their journeys, their ups and downs, and their trials. Listen in to Life Shifting with Dr. J on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You'll be inspired and moved to step up to your growing edge and shift your life into high gear. Visit TransformationTalkRadio.com for the complete show schedule.
In the last 30 years, over 1 million people have gone from busy and a bit overweight to busy enjoying life, having lost weight using MetaFast products. The Take Shape for Life program has taken that success of MetaFast meals even further with a free certified health coach and a realistic and simple plan. You're not fixing a problem. You're on a journey to optimal health. Learn more, talk to a health coach, and hear their story of success. Call 877-520-SIMPLE. That's 877-520-SIMPLE. Results will vary. Talk to your doctor before starting program. Call for details.
Remember, for our dogs and cats to live long and happy lives, just like people, they are what they eat. Wellness Carefully selects wholesome ingredients to create food you can trust to provide the foundation of your pet's well-being. True wellness means every ingredient has a purpose in every recipe they make. You can trust the quality of all ingredients in wellness from their source to your pet's bowl. Visit wellnesspetfood.com to find a pet specialty retailer near you. Wellness Natural Food for Pets. This is where true wellness begins.
We are living in a time of great challenges and greater opportunity for transformation. The good news is that public awareness of the need for change is also growing exponentially. More than ever, your transformative message is needed to empower millions across the globe.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pat, host of the Dr. Pat Show, and I'm excited about announcing an unprecedented opportunity for growth as we expand our broadcast by launching Transformation Talk Radio and the Transformation Network. Join me and a team of amazing people and host your own show on Transformation Talk Radio. Get ready to expand your horizons, tap into the best listeners anywhere, and join one of the most positive and expansive networks today.
Historically, there came a time when the boundary of water was transcended as man developed the boat, and the barriers of water became freeways. Join Dr. Pat as she launches this exciting venture. To host a show, call 1-800-930-2819 or email host at transformationtalkradio.com.
And we're back. You're listening to Life Shifting with Dr. J. And I am talking today to spiritual counselor and writer meditation teacher, interfaith minister, Phil Goldberg, who has an amazing new book out called American Veda. And this book, I highly encourage anyone who practices meditation or has been involved with yoga to grab a copy of this book and just peruse it, because it will pull you in. And also, I want to mention that there's an entire website dedicated to the book, AmericanVeda.com. One word, AmericanVeda.com. And what Phil has done with this book is basically trace the roots of the spiritual practices and principles that here in the United States we've come to kind of take as just sort of the backdrop for some of our new age, kind of non-religious, more generally spiritual areas of practice like yoga. And he's traced it back to the Hindu and Indian cultural roots, and really showing us how the world is getting smaller and how things are, how the different cultures from the East and the West not only evolve together, but how we influence each other. And just before the break, we started talking a little bit more about this evolution. And Phil, I'd love for you to just talk a little bit about your research. You went all the way back to the 19th century and the influence of these sacred Indian texts on people like Ralph Waldo Emerson and Thoreau. And then you mentioned how this kind of evolved up into the middle part of the 20th century. Maybe you could track us a little bit, because it comes all the way up to the Beatles and current time, and it's really a fascinating journey.
Yeah, well, the American piece of it, of course, you know, contact with between Europe and India had been going on for a long time, but the American piece of it really does begin in Emerson's era in the early 19th century, when the first translations and commentaries about Indian spiritual traditions arrived in Boston. And they had a huge impact on Emerson and as a result on Thoreau and Whitman, and then a lot of the progenitors of the New Thought movement and all intellectuals and well-educated people of the late 19th century. And then gurus started to come here, the first being Swami Vivekananda in 1893, and others started to come in the 20th century, most notably Paramahansa Yogananda, whose autobiography of a yogi was a huge influence. And then came the 60s, which probably a lot of your listeners remember if they're of a certain age.
Right.
And there was a lot of Indian influence going around, largely because of the music of Ravi Shankar and the people first starting to make pilgrimages to ashrams in India, and gurus and yoga teachers starting to arrive here in larger numbers. And then when the Beatles discovered Maharishi Mahesh Yogi and his transcendental meditation and went to India with him, it was a huge, huge moment in cultural history. The publicity, the media went bananas over this, and suddenly meditation was in the news every day, and words like mantra and guru became well known, and the whole, everything shifted. I think that was the key moment in American spiritual history.
Right.
And within a few years, meditation had gone from this sort of counterculture phenomenon and youth market phenomenon into the heart of the mainstream, because scientists started to study what was going on when people meditated. And then, of course, it became legitimized, so too did more of the other gurus and other Indian spiritual teachers, and what we think of now as yoga, the physical practices, started to become more and more widely diffused in the culture. Scientists picked up on it, scholars picked up on these teachings, and it spread into healthcare, it spread into psychology, and so that's the kind of overview of the historical development. It's one of increasing mainstreaming of these teachings and adapting them to different avenues of life in America.
Yeah, I'm very interested to have you comment about the what strikes me is that this confluence of the East, their influence of the Eastern philosophies on the West, it seems like that at least until recently, the bigger influence or the bigger public awareness has been around Buddhism. And I'm wondering, do you see that the influence or the knowledge around Hinduism has been pretty much the same, or how do you articulate
sort of the opposite? We get into terminology problems here because the word Hinduism is so widely misunderstood that most of the teachers who came here, the most popular ones I just mentioned, the yoga teachers, they're more likely to have used terms like yoga and Vedanta than Hinduism because they wanted the teachings presented as a universal scientific approach to spiritual development and human development rather than a religious thing. So much of the impact, people don't even associate it necessarily with the term Hinduism. But the Buddhist influence is much more of a recent phenomenon, whereas the teachers I mentioned and the books that were coming in, and especially the yoga phenomenon, has been going on for quite a long time.
Yeah, that's true.
But they overlap. Now, my book is mainly about the what I think of as what you think of as the Vedic influence, the influence of yoga and Vedanta from the Hindu tradition. I didn't have space to also cover Buddhism in America, but I refer to it, and they're kind of intersecting streams because a lot of the people, especially the very well-known transmitters of these teachings who are American, most of us, if we've been influenced by one, we've also been influenced to some degree by another. And,
that's
of course,
true.
Both Hinduism and Buddhism come from the same earlier tradition of India that we think of as Vedic tradition. Buddhism
right.
was a kind of reform movement. And so they have a lot of overlap and a lot of things in common.
Yeah, I think that fundamentally the two big distinctions, it seems to me, is the practice of yoga, which I think, to your point, we don't associate as much with Buddhism.
Except, in the larger sense of what yoga is, we don't associate the physical practices, what
right.
are called hatha yoga, with Buddhism.
Right.
But the larger context of yoga, which means union of the self with
exactly.
the divine or the universal self, and the union of mind and body and spirit, the larger context of yoga is very much in line with Buddhism. You could say Buddha was a yogi. He started out that way. He set
right.
out to be
a
renunciate.
Although the term guru, I think we don't typically associate with Buddhism either.
No, we don't, because most of what came to us, the Buddhism that came to us, didn't come directly from India. It came from Japan with the Zen tradition and the Tibetan tradition from Tibet and other traditions from other parts of Asia where they use terms other than guru, like Lama.
Right.
Roshi.
Right. Although, isn't it true that the word guru itself actually just means teacher? Is that accurate?
It means teacher, but it has a more a sort of exalted feeling when it's in a spiritual context.
Mm. Yeah. No, it's interesting because as a meditation practitioner myself and as a yoga instructor myself, I have to, you know, reading your book, it was like an eye-opening experience to see the influence of the Vedanta background and the Hindu background that I think I sort of take for granted without actually having thought it through. And I think there's
yeah.
probably a lot of people listening who have exactly that same kind of experience. And
You bet. And there's, you know, a tremendous number of people who see yoga as just a fitness exercise or a wellness practice. But they're also tend to be in line with some of the philosophical foundations of it. But there's also one of the interesting things is that these principles have pervaded the culture to such a degree that if you look at surveys of people's attitudes about their own spiritual lives or about religion in general, they're very much in line with basic principles of Indian philosophy. And they may not even know that, you know, what they've picked up on had anything to do with India, because they got it from reading a psychologist or a self-help author or, you know, whatever other sources it might be.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's where the West is sort of this melting pot of all the different streams of spiritual evolution. And what's great about your book is that it's kind of helping to tease us apart and really see where these things evolved from and understand the value of knowing the deeper background, some of the foundational precepts.
Yeah, and it's, in a sense, giving credit where it's due and putting things in a larger context. Spiritually and philosophically, I'll bet most of your or many of your listeners would categorize themselves as spiritual but not religious.
Right.
This is
yeah.
the fastest growing category in American religious life. And I don't think it would have been possible to have such a category if these practical teachings from the Asian traditions didn't come to us, so that people who were not inclined toward organized religion or conventional religion,
right.
but who felt a deep spiritual impulse, the teachings from Asia gave them a way to exercise that impulse, to learn practices like meditation and yoga,
right.
and understand their spirituality in a universal context without having to sort of pledge allegiance to any single tradition that didn't feel right to them.
Right. No, I love that. And in fact, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, I also want to talk about how these practices and themes influence science. You have a wonderful chapter in here on the soul and science and the confluence of the Indian spiritual themes influencing the scientific world. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Phil Goldberg and American Veda.
Life Shifting with Dr. J is a show about living full out and helping listeners to banish their fears, embrace their dreams, and move with greater ease through the ups and downs of our crazy world. Dr. J's Life Shifting method is all about reinventing and renewing ourselves throughout our lives. Dr. J will have a wide array of entertaining, insightful, and highly credentialed guests who will inspire us with stories of their own life shifts. Listeners will wake up, listen deeply, and reflect about their own lives, and are encouraged to call in and get live coaching from Dr. J and his expert guests who are passionate about helping people reclaim lost vitality. Life Shifting with Dr. J is about heartfelt dialogue, amazing life stories, personal struggles of highly successful people, their journeys, their ups and downs, and their triumphs. Listen in to Life Shifting with Dr. J on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You'll be inspired and moved to step up to your growing edge and shift your life into high gear. Visit TransformationTalkRadio.com for the complete show schedule.
Do you ever get so frazzled you find it difficult to function? Many people are experiencing more stress and fear than ever. When we react from this place of fear and stress, we end up damaging relationships and creating more grief in our lives. Lynette McKenzie has a solution for you. The Energy Emergency Toolkit. 10 easy tools to go from frazzled to fantastic in 5 minutes. Visit OpenLiveNow.com and download your free Energy Emergency Toolkit and go from frazzled to fantastic now.
Remember, for our dogs and cats to live long and happy lives, just like people, they are what they eat. Wellness Carefully selects wholesome ingredients to create food you can trust to provide the foundation of your pet's well-being. True wellness means every ingredient has a purpose in every recipe they make. You can trust the quality of all ingredients in wellness from their source to your pet's bowl. Visit wellnesspetfood.com to find a pet specialty retailer near you. Wellness Natural Food for Pets. This is where true wellness begins.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have. Cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't just take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you're hurt. We want to help. We're so sure Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want pain relief with no side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Bi-Mart, New Seasons, and other fine health food stores and co-ops. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store nearest you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
We are living in a time of great challenges and greater opportunity for transformation. The good news is that public awareness of the need for change is also growing exponentially. More than ever, your transformative message is needed to empower millions across the globe.
Hi, I'm Dr. Pat, host of the Dr. Pat Show, and I'm excited about announcing an unprecedented opportunity for growth as we expand our broadcast by launching Transformation Talk Radio and the Transformation Network. Join me and a team of amazing people and host your own show on Transformation Talk Radio. Get ready to expand your horizons, tap into the best listeners anywhere, and join one of the most positive and expansive networks today.
Historically, there came a time when the boundary of water was transcended as man developed the boat, and the barriers of water became freeways. Join Dr. Pat as she launches this exciting venture. To host a show, call 1-800-930-2819 or email host at transformationtalkradio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Life Shifting with Dr. J, and I am in dialogue today with a wonderful friend and author, Phil Goldberg, and we're talking about his fabulous new book called American Veda and the influence of Indian culture and history and spiritual practices on the West, on America in particular. And just before the break, I mentioned that my favorite chapter in this book is called The Soul of Science, The Science of Soul. And in this chapter, in this part of the book, Phil talks about the, you know, really kind of more up to the minute, what's happening in our culture today, where two subject areas that have traditionally been in distinct conflict, the spiritual and the scientific, are finally in some ways kind of breaking through and being discussed together. And I think that what Phil's book does is bring to the front, for those of us that are interested in this subject, the idea that the influence of the Indian spiritual themes is breaking that boundary that says that science can't be spiritual and spirituality can't be scientifically based. And Phil, I'd love to have you talk a little bit about that. How did you decide to frame this theme? I think this is, with the studies of meditation, the scientific, the medical community is very interested. But what you've done is you've kind of pointed us in the direction of where these two worlds collide, and in a very positive way.
Yeah, there's a couple of things going on in the intersection of Indian spirituality and science. On the one hand, there's what most of us or many of us are familiar with, which is the scientific study of the effects of yoga and meditation. That began in the late 60s, and the very first studies on the effects of meditation on the body were published in reputable journals in 1970 and then the 71, 72. After the Beatles made Transcendental Meditation world famous, various scientists started to look into what was actually going on in the body and the brain when people meditated. And by then, TM provided a practice for them that was uniform enough to fit scientific standards of investigation. And by now, there's well over 1,000 studies on meditation of different kinds, and the research is very, very sophisticated using brain imaging.
Let me interrupt you quickly because I'm curious. I'm very curious. How do you think that the scientific and medical community actually initially became interested in this topic? Like what?
Well, it was clearly the first thing was young people started to meditate. They started to say, "I'm not doing drugs anymore. I'm meditating instead." They cleaned up their act. Don't forget, this was the '60s.
Right.
And grown-ups were very, very worried about the hippie subculture and the drugs.
Okay.
And when people, you know, led by the Beatles and others, sort of cleaned up their acts and were meditating instead of doing drugs, scientists said, "What's going on here?" And gurus like Maharishi Mahesh Yogi were educated in science in India and encouraged this. And so that was really the beginning. Other than, you know, just curiosity, because people have been hearing about yogis for many decades and thinking, you know, a lot of what we now think of as biofeedback came from investigation of yogis who could do control their bodies with their mind. So that was the beginning. It was like, if this stuff is making people feel better and improving their health, what's going on?
Right.
How do we...
Okay.
And then it became an accepted model for stress reduction. And so starting in the 70s, meditation as an antidote to stress, as a natural antidote, non-chemical antidote to stress, became very popular. And then with the advent of the physical practices of yoga, studies on those practices started to develop. So now there's something, for example, called yoga therapy, which people are integrating into other modes of...
Well, you know, one of the things that's interesting about this is that, and you point this out in your book, is that it's potentially problematic in that in the 80s and 90s, these things, yoga and meditation, became scientifically acceptable and medically positive. But as you point out in the book, and as I experience, the spirituality sometimes gets stripped out of it. And
that's the potential downside.
It's
like this, and it's true. So there's a kind of paradoxical thing going on. If yoga and meditation are reduced to stress reduction or physical wellness, then you're going to lose something vital that came from India and that we should all be very grateful for and encourage. That is the larger picture of spiritual development and the expansion of consciousness that comes with these practices when they're done right. On the other hand, because of the health emphasis, it became more acceptable and more people are open to trying these practices. So, and many of them then discover the spiritual side. So there's a little give and take kind of tension going on in the yoga community and in the meditation community, where people are trying very hard to make sure it's accessible, but at the same time, the essence of it and the spiritual foundation of it is not lost.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe the good news, and you point to this in the latter part of your book, is that the scientific community is now bringing the spiritual topic maybe back to the front by bringing in themes like quantum physics, where people like Amit Goswami are actually writing about consciousness, but with real scientific credentials.
So, right, and this intersection science and Indian philosophy actually goes back a long time. Some of the legendary physicists of our history, people like Oppenheimer and Schrodinger and Heisenberg, were very strongly philosophically influenced by the teachings of the Vedantic tradition in Indian philosophy, because when you look into it, and we don't have time here, obviously, the compatibility, once you get past the cultural differences and certain language and imagery, are very, very compatible, and they recognize this all along. So this notion of the universe having a unified factor. What, you know, physicists have been looking for, the unified field theory.
Right.
And the unity, the sort of unified vision of the universe and the unity of the individual consciousness and the sort of consciousness of the universe that has, that India has been writing about, you know, for thousands of years, in the minds of forward-thinking physicists, is a very real one, not just a symbolic one or not just a metaphorical one. And so there are people like Goswami and others who are looking to make these connections in a very real, rigorous, scientific way to bring consciousness into the study of physics.
Yeah, it's a very interesting dynamic because it's so hard to have the credibility of the scientific community without appearing to a certain extent sort of reductionistic. And
that's right.
You know, I think it's a paradox that we all grapple with. We want to stay connected to the bigger questions of consciousness and how we are perhaps all one conscious field, and the spiritual conversation is about oneness and connection, and yet then we talk about meditation and having sort of a stress reductive, you know, lowering your heart attack potential, and then we're back to talking about human beings like machines.
Right, and so there's always been that tension in science,
right,
even without the influence of India, but you know, this will all be worked out in time by people who are experts in these fields. And one other area of this that we should mention is your field, which is psychology. One of the trends that I discuss in that chapter you like is how the teachings of the East, of Hinduism and Buddhism, influenced some of the more prominent psychologists starting in the 50s and 60s,
right,
like Abraham Maslow and others, to in the development and the expansion of psychology beyond the Freudian model and the behaviorism model to embrace what came to be known as humanistic psychology and transpersonal psychology,
right,
so that now the spiritual dimension of human life, which was totally ignored before that, is part of the milieu, so to speak, of how psychologists and psychotherapists now view the world. And this is a tremendous development. It added, I think one of the important things India has given us is a bigger view of the possibilities of human development.
It sort of added
levels of development to the way we previously understood what we were capable of.
Absolutely. We're going to take our final break, and let's come back on that note and talk a little bit about psychology and how I hope your book will support people bringing that spiritual conversation into their practices.
Life Shifting with Dr. J is a show about living full out and helping listeners to banish their fears, embrace their dreams, and move with greater ease through the ups and downs of our crazy world. Dr. J's Life Shifting Method is all about reinventing and renewing ourselves throughout our lives. Dr. J will have a wide array of entertaining, insightful, and highly credentialed guests who will inspire us with stories of their own life shifts. Listeners will wake up, listen deeply, and reflect about their own lives, and are encouraged to call in and get live coaching from Dr. J and his expert guests who are passionate about helping people reclaim lost vitality. Life Shifting with Dr. J is about heartfelt dialogue, amazing life stories, personal struggles of highly successful people, their journeys, their ups and downs, and their triumphs. Listen in to Life Shifting with Dr. J on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You'll be inspired and moved to step up to your growing edge and shift your life into high gear. Visit TransformationTalkRadio.com for the complete show schedule.
Are you tired of being tired? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Did you know the adrenal glands, the workhorse of the body? They are the means by which you position yourself in life for whatever comes your way. Tiny but mighty, producing hormones the body uses to promote energy and vitality. These adrenals determine how you respond to stress, and when depleted, the body loses its ability to function powerfully when we need it most. The much-needed adrenaline or epinephrine is not available for emergency situations. Cortisone and cortisol, the longer-acting anti-stress adrenal hormones, can also become depleted due to the pace of our everyday lives. We overwork and undernutrition our most powerful ally that helps us to live the lives we desire. With CRA, we are able to determine the optimum function of the adrenals and put your system back in balance. Contact us today to feel powerfully energized at 888-777-4232 or visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
The 19th Annual Women of Wisdom Conference is February 17th through the 21st. Our theme is Women Arise, Unveil the Power of the Divine Feminine. Special guests are Susan Weed, Carolyn Sutherland, and many others, sharing their gifts through experiential events all weekend long. Join our email list at womenofwisdom.org and watch for announcements about the conference. That's womenofwisdom.org.
After a 15-year search for a truly delicious, healthy, easy-to-prepare organic meal, Savitri and Adil Pakivala founded Eastern Essence. They set out to do what their friends and business acquaintances thought impossible, to produce delicious, healthy, vital food grown in harmony with nature and to promote organic farming in India. Happy food, happy people, happy planet. For more information, go to easternessence.com. That's easternessence.com.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Life Shifting with Dr. J. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Hull, and I'm talking today with Phil Goldberg about his wonderful new book called American Veda, The Influence of Indian Spirituality on the West. And just before the break, Phil had teed up a theme that's sort of near and dear to my heart about the evolution of the field of psychology and the influence of the Indians and the Hindu philosophies on that field. And, you know, it's interesting, Phil. One of the things that I experience as a Jungian therapist is that there's really still a very big split in the field of psychology between what I would call the biomedical model focus and the spiritually oriented counselors. And, you know, and it really shows up in the field of psychiatry with a pharmacological emphasis that, you know, people really are kind of erring on the side of the biomedical model and trying to fix everything that ails them with pharmaceuticals these days. And I'm wondering, I mean, I'm excited about your book because it seems like maybe this is the kind of book that will start to heal this schism. What do you think?
Well, I'd like to give my book credit for healing a schism, but I think it'll take more than a book. You know, the pharmaceutical lobby is a lot stronger than the spiritual lobby, for one thing. And but this has been going on for a long time, as you know, Jeff. And you know, it takes a while for the people with a bigger view and a more natural and holistic view of life to make themselves heard, you know, in a world where, you know, it's a lot easier for a therapist to write a prescription than to work with people. And it's also a paradigm shift because, you know, the scientific model has not been very friendly to anything that seems to be spiritual or religious in nature. But that, you know, there's a trend line that if you look back far enough, you know, the psychologists, you know, beginning with Richard Alpert, who became Ram Dass, and people like Maslow and some of the other early pioneers of a new way of looking at the human mind and human consciousness, they've made tremendous inroads. So now, you know, you can see changes over the course of 30 or 40 years, to the point where now there are conferences about psychotherapy and spirituality, and the average shrink doesn't just dismiss their clients' spiritual concerns as some kind of illusion, as, you know, Freud would have had it.
That's true.
There's been a lot of change, and the more that these spiritual practices like meditation and yoga can be shown scientifically to help people, then, you know, that's the language that people understand and recognize. And hence, you know, the more opportunities there are to do that research and the more funding that comes through, the faster the shift will take place.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think there are times, though, when it's a little frustrating to operate in a paradigm today where I have clients that are yoga practitioners, that are meditators, and yet on a whole slew of antidepressants.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, and they have their place too, you know, obviously, but, you know, I think you'll agree that they're widely overused. And, you know, it'll all sort itself out. And I think a lot of this will be consumer-driven. I think there's a parallel in psychology to what we now think of as alternative medicine. You know, if you go back to the 60s and 70s, you know, just something as respectable as acupuncture was really off the wall back then.
That's true.
And
that's
people
true.
Taking herbs and, you know, eating natural and organic foods for health purposes. This was all weird. Now it's part of, now holistic medicine and, you know, alternative medicine is integrative medicine is part of the culture. And there's a similar thing happening in psychology, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And I think if you, and in fact, that's one of the things that I loved about your book is it sort of took a wide angle lens on the evolution of the, not only the influence of the East on us, but also the evolution of these spiritual practices and how they have become mainstream. I mean, we only have a few more minutes and I'd love to have you share maybe your hopes and dreams for this book and the kind of work. I know you're going to be traveling around the country and, a lot of our listeners are on the East Coast. We have a mainstream radio listening audience up in New England and across, of course, the country through the internet. But, you know, share with listeners a little bit about what you hope to do in your travels with the book. Are your workshops and talks and what are your dreams for what this book can bring to the country?
Well, I'm hoping, you know, that obviously I'm an author who spent a few years writing a book and he wants to sell a zillion copies and, and get on the New York Times bestseller list and all the rest of that stuff. I'm not immune. I'm, I'm an idealistic, high-minded person, but I'm not, immune to wanting that kind of material success. And I'm hoping the book, you know, will reach large numbers of people and illuminate them. And the emails I've been getting from people who read it and hear shows like this have been very, very encouraging. You're right about lecturing and giving workshops. I'm doing everything from, you know, short bookstore type of lectures to 3-hour workshops to weekend workshops. In different parts of the country. In fact, I'll be in New England at the end of March. I have a few speaking gigs in Boston, and I'm looking to do others. And I'll be in New York right after that. And I hope to get to other parts of the country too, where I'm invited to speak and where it makes you know, financial sense to go and give talks or workshops. So. I'm open for invitations. I can be reached through AmericanVeda.com. I think there's something in this for, you know, a wide variety of audiences, and I'm hoping that it'll reach a lot of people because I think it's a story that everybody should know, and the implications for the future, I think, are profound.
Yeah, I mean, I was really moved by the book. I found it very accessible. It was really very well written and easy to read. It was not academic, but it was loaded with great information and pretty rare these days to find a book that kind of threads the influences of the East and the West together. And, you know, in light of the fact that places like India and China are kind of looming large on our political and economic landscape these days. You know, I found it to be a really positive and exciting opportunity to kind of make the world a little less disjointed and to feel a little more connected to how it's all one universal conversation.
Thanks. So, I really appreciate that. And that's part of this. The purpose of writing the book is to show those connections and just realize we're more connected than we think. And you're right. I've even gotten some response from business people who don't have a spiritual bone in their body, really, but they doing business in India.
So that's
the,
right.
The book
that's
helps
right.
them understand their clients.
Exactly. Well, listen, Phil, it's been great having you. I really appreciate your taking the time. I want to wish you all the best with the book. And
thank
I want
you.
To thank everyone for listening in this week. And as I said at the beginning, this week was God and next week is money. So join me next Monday when I'm going to have best-selling author Alvin Hall, who's going to talk about your money or your life and get us set up financially and emotionally for a great 2011. So have a wonderful week, everyone, and I'll see you next Monday. Good night.